Good morning, and welcome to MomsFightingAutism.com, our two-day conference, Things to Know About Autism. Today is Sunday. I hope that all of you who are listening today have been able to hook in parts of yesterday, and I hope that you're enjoying this conference. I know the comments we've been getting have been really wonderful, and I want to take this opportunity to thank Ernest Priestley, the founder of MomsFightingAutism.com, whose idea this was, who sponsored this event, and this whole idea is thanks to Ernest. So he's been really busy these last couple of days taking care of the technical aspects of this conference. So today is a continuation, and this morning we'll start off with a presentation by my son Jeremy Cecile Kira, which acknowledges the fact that autism is a spectrum with different abilities and challenges, as yesterday's keynote presentation was by Temple Grandin. And Temple has different abilities and challenges than Jeremy does. Some of the other people that will be presenting today include Debbie Bialer on toilet training, Darlene Hansen on augmented team and expanding communication, Peggy Schaefer on neurologic music therapy, Shannon Schlottman on the role of occupational therapy in improving learning and behavior, among others. So right now I'm going to get started on Jeremy's presentation, once again brought to you by MomsFightingAutism.com. I'm your moderator today, Chantal Cecile Kira. I moderate webinars for Moms Fighting Autism once a month. And for more information, you can go to MomsFightingAutism.com or even my website on my events page. I usually have them listed there. My latest book is 41 Things to Know About Autism, which came out in time for April, which, as all of you know, is Autism Awareness Month, which is another reason why Ernest is providing this conference to everyone at this time. You can find out more about me and my books on www.chantalcecile-kira.com. You know, sometimes I wish I had a name like Jill Brown or something close to that, because people have a hard time finding my name without knowing how to spell it exactly on the Internet. And here are my other books, Autism Spectrum Disorders, Adolescence on the Autism Spectrum, and Autism Life Skills. Here's my influence and the reason why I write the books that I do. This is my son, Jeremy. I did work with young adults and teenagers with developmental disabilities, including autism, a very long time ago. And then many years later, I had my son, Jeremy, which brought me back into the field of autism. And he is my inspiration. So today's presentation is Learning with Autism, A Personal Viewpoint by Jeremy. So first of all, what's going to be happening today during the keynote presentation is I will be giving a little background about Jeremy, and then I will be playing Jeremy's PowerPoint presentation, which he wrote, that's called My Experiences That Might Help You. Now, this presentation was written for another conference when he was asked to be a part of a panel of young adults with autism to explain what it was like to have autism. And since then, he's shown it a few different times. But it's the first time that we're showing it on the Internet. He wrote this with the help of his school aides. And when I mean the help of his school aides, these are all his words and his thoughts, but they helped with the technical aspects of putting the PowerPoint presentation together, because motor-wise, he's not able to, and he yet, at any rate, handle all the button pushing and everything you need to do to actually get a PowerPoint look up on your screen. Then his voice output software on his small computer will play this article he wrote, The Importance of Music, as well as another one called Vision Processing. Now, both of these articles were originally written for his Torrey Pines High School newsletter, as he has a monthly column in his school paper called Life as I See It. Then there will be question and answers questions have been sent in ahead of time, and Jeremy has been busy answering them with the help of his support person. A little background about Jeremy. Jeremy was born in Paris, France in 1989, and like Temple's mother, I was also told to find a good institution for my son. And since my past work experience had been to help deinstitutionalize young adults in California from a state hospital out into group homes, obviously that was not an option for me. There was no way I was going to place my son in one. And I've always had the philosophy that the best thing for people, if possible, is to live in their own community. Jeremy never reached his usual milestones. This means he has classic autism. He does not have the regressive autism. And for those who don't understand or know the difference, regressive autism is when you have a child who develops normally, that is, reaches their milestones that most babies and children do, according to the developmental milestones that are established as being what normal people reach. And then they regress, meaning they lose the skills that they have acquired. And this usually happens between 18 months and 24 months. Now, we see a lot more of this regressive type of autism, whereas in the past, you would see more of the classic type autism, which is someone who is born like Jeremy and never develops in the usual way, never reaches the developmental milestones. Jeremy had a lot of problems and still does with his motor planning, and he never could do anything without being taught how to do it. We had to teach him each physical movement. He rolled over once when he was 9 months, and he never did it again. He never got into a sitting position on his own. He never would eat on his own. All of these things, I took Jeremy to a physical therapist and the physical twice a week, and then we repeated the exercises at home, mom and babysitters. And so this is how Jeremy learned to do everything, roll over, reach for things, sit up, crawl, walk, eat, everything. Then Jeremy was raised in France, the United Kingdom, and California, and he had a combination of home programs and public school. Fast forward to today, Jeremy was in a show called MTV True Life. Many of you may have seen it. You can still find it on the internet in a segment called I Have Autism. And so this particular segment, I Have Autism, was the recipient of a 2007 Voice Award. And Jeremy's particular segment was voted the second most inspirational moment out of nearly 300 True Life episodes in 2009. So that really made him happy that his life is inspiring others. He now has his own column in his high school newspaper called Life as I See It. He writes from time to time for autism magazines, and he hopes to get published in mainstream newspapers. He's actually just finished writing his first editorial that he's sending to the local newspaper, and I hope that it gets picked up. He is writing a book, and he does present on autism and inclusion. He's graduating from high school in June with a full academic diploma. His current grade point average is 3.5. He's concurrently taken his first community college class, which is, he picked intercultural communications. And along the way, I have found a good institution for him. It's called college. And for more information, you can go to my website, which is up on the screen, which is my name, or you can even Google Jeremy's name if you know how to spell his. And you can click on my homepage where it says My Son Jeremy's Story. Now, before I continue with this presentation, I do want to make the point that even though I fast-forwarded to the present, none of this of what has happened with Jeremy has been easy. All of it is the result of blood, sweat, and tears and a lot of hard work on Jeremy's part, my part, and people along the way in the school districts, everywhere, professionals who are on the same page, everyone worked really hard. I mean, Jeremy worked the hardest. So this isn't about, oh my gosh, one day Jeremy just came out of himself. Everything that I did from the moment he was born helped him become who he is today. And a lot of things I just realized now because he communicates about it, and I had no clue whether what I was doing was helpful or not. So if I may allow myself to give some advice before I put on Jeremy's presentations, it is to say to parents, first of all, follow your instinct and do what you think is right. Secondly, do not allow yourself to feel guilty, or if you do feel, allow yourself to get over that feeling of what did I do or what should I have done, because that's another thing, you know, as I get older and Jeremy can communicate more, I realize, oh my gosh, there's all these things that I should have done. You can't waste your time thinking about that, but focus on what you have done that has helped your child. And the last thing I want to say is if you have a child who is not able to communicate to you, do not think that the child is not hearing you and does not understand. Because one of the things I find out now from Jeremy is that all the reading that I did to him, all the singing that I did to him, everything helped him to learn to understand words and to help him to put meaning to pictures. A lot of it was teaching that came from me just from talking to him. And I always spoke to him as if he could understand, because I thought, even if he doesn't understand, so what? But if he is understanding, at least he's having the opportunity to learn something. And if that's the one piece of advice I can give to people, is always treat your children as if they understand everything, because they could be soaking it all in. And now I'm going to change over to Jeremy's second part of the presentation. And this is his presentation that he wrote for a conference. And so I'm now going to put the phone onto his small voice output machine, his little tiny computer, and I've done a test run, so this should work. And you will see the screens will show you what he is saying. So if you have difficulty hearing, you can see.
Body most of the time. I'm 20 years old and have come a long way. The thoughts and ideas in this presentation are all mine, as I typed them on my letterboard or light writer. One of my tutors was kind enough to help me create this PowerPoint. I hope this presentation makes you think you can't do anything. Here is my story. My experiences. That might help you. The first time I did ABA, I was 5 years old. I hated the repetition, but overall it was good for me. I stopped ABA around 9 years old, and didn't view my experience with the task positive until I was 19. Parents, don't give up on ABA. It's helping your kid whether you see it or not. Kids, don't tune it out. Let in as much as you can. The repetition is annoying, but it will make you better in the long run. My way of viewing the world is no different from anyone else, but because I physically see differently, and I'm aware of it, I have to concentrate more on what's going on to see from a more normal perspective. If I don't concentrate, everything going on seems surreal. I want to be more normal, so viewing the world comes more naturally to me. Parents, be patient. Your child may really not see things the way you do. Your child may see things exactly the same as you, but can't get the words out yet. Kids, just try to concentrate on one thing, whether it's blinking lights or a toy. This will help you pay attention. Reading. My problem was not being able to attach meaning to shapes. It wasn't until my mom put big letters on transparencies that I started to learn letters. I learned to read by listening to the words my mom would say and point at. We practiced this a lot. Parents. My mom got me to read, and there are a lot more mild cases of autism out there than what I have. So if I can't do it, many others should too. Kids, This might be the most important thing in your life. If you can't read, the world is yours. Typing. It was hard at first because I never used my hand to point like that before. It was great because I finally had a way to communicate. It was weird because I never had a voice before that. Parents. It's not only important to teach your kids typing, but for you to be good at understanding it. Conversations are really important, and they help your child feel human. Kids, make it a point to learn typing if you don't already know. Typing is one of the most important things, because it gives you voice. Motor skills. There were things I could not do that going to occupational therapy helped me to be able to do, like hold a fork or wash my hands. I still have room for improvement as I want to start my own business, but it's difficult for me. Parents, get your kid to OT. It will help them move better. Kids, make a lot of mistakes to get better. Stimming. Around age 9, a professional said the stimming might have helped me to stay calm and focused. It is a way to not let my brain melt down. It helps me to concentrate on what's going on around me. Parents. It doesn't mean your kid isn't paying attention, just that they're trying their best to be present. Kids. Don't worry about what you look like. It's more important to be present than to look present. If you're in a place you don't want to be seen twirling a kid's toy, make sure you have a lot of toys with you so you can use one appropriate for the setting. Hearing was difficult when I was young because I had to find the difference between background noise and when someone was talking to me. My brain is now trained I can hear perfectly. I just had to learn which noises to pay attention to. Parents, the best thing is to get your kid to hearing therapy. If not, they will have a tough time learning to understand. Kids, you may not want to listen to all the things you can hear, but it's better than being deaf. Working hard and continuing to persevere. Therapies I currently enjoy. I work on better eye contact and vision therapy. Music therapy helps my body tempo. I develop better body control and occupational therapy. Psychotherapy gives me a better sense of my thoughts. Academics. I'm fully included in high school. I passed the California High School Exit Exam. My tutors helped me. Math was the hardest for me because problems have so many steps when you're solving by spelling each step out. I have been in charge of multiple business ventures, such as selling sandwiches, selling flowers, and overseeing a coffee business. I'm fully included in the lives of family and friends. My past tutors stick around and remain friends of mine. I enjoy going to movies, concerts, barbecues, swimming, and going to the beach. I stay in touch with friends through email, Facebook, and texting on my phone. My life has been difficult at times, but I've also had my fair share of happiness. My childhood was nice, as I'm sure many of yours were, or still are. Being a kid can be very fun. You look at busy adults and think, man, I'm glad I'm a kid, not having to worry about big things. But in reality, the freedom comes as you get older, understanding autism and what it means, being able to make my way into society and not taking for granted all the great people in my life. If you have autism, there is hope. Hope for the individual and for his or her family. I have found five things that help to enrich my life. I believe having a strong support system is key, but nothing matters if you don't believe in yourself. The end.
Okay, and I would like to say a couple of things about these PowerPoints before I continue on with Jeremy's presentation. And the first thing I wanted to tell you is that I never saw this presentation until it was totally finished, until the day before he was about to present it at a conference in Anaheim, California. And so I was blown away because I did not realize he was writing it as advice to the parents and advice to the children. I thought that was really, really cool. So I was really expecting him just to say, you know, sort of his life story. I really liked the way that he organized that. Now, the other thing I wanted to say is Jeremy mentions vision therapy, and he says he works on eye contact. And actually, I'm not sure if this is what he means by it, but Jeremy's eyesight works really well. He looks at things from the sides of his eyes. He has great peripheral vision. And so he might be saying when he says that he works with for eye contact is that we're teaching him to use his eyes directly so that his eyes can converge and that he can see things the way most people do. So it's not really eye contact in the sense of we're not teaching him to look at other people in the eye, but it's to use his eyes in a more neurotypical manner of looking at the paper and processing more easily the information that's there. And he mentions the California High School Exit Exam. That's an exam that's given to all high school students in the state of California in 10th grade, which you must pass, as well as you must have a number of credits in certain subjects areas in order to receive your California high school diploma as a senior. And you have 6 tries to pass this exam. And so it was originally given to Jeremy when he was 19 as a way of seeing what he was missing in terms of academics and what his knowledge base was, in the hopes that he would be able to catch up and pass the high school exit exam before he reached the age of 22, when he was no longer going to be in the school, you know, because of IDEA. And education is only mandated to, in our state, the age of 22. So interestingly enough, he passed the test on his first try, which was quite amazing. So, and he was not given any modifications. He only had accommodations, which is what the law is here in terms of test taking. So that was really good, and I do have to thank Jeremy's school district, because it was not my goal for Jeremy to try and attain an academic diploma. I never even considered it. I just thought when he was able to do this academic work that, you know, maybe one day he'll get a GED, and I was more concerned about the practical aspects. But the school said, you know, he has enough credits. He needs credits in these areas. If he can pass the California exit exam, then it's probably worthwhile for him to try and get his diploma. So I do want to recognize the school district for their forward thinking, because I know that that's not always the case everywhere. I'm going to now go to the next presentation, which is the first article that you'll be hearing here is the article on music. And the reason why Jeremy was suggesting that this be part of the presentation is because music plays such an important part in his life. And it's known that music also plays an important part in many people's lives who are on the spectrum in terms of sequencing and so forth. So here are his comments about music.
This first article first ran in the Torrey Pines High School newspaper, The Falconer, in January 2010. Life as I See It. Column by Jeremy Sisalkira. Music makes my life feel normal sometimes, because it is such a universal language. It is the way I tend to sync my mind with my body. It is such a strong package of feelings that are involved with every note, and I'm sure that I'm not the only one who feels that way about it. When I hear music, I feel a roller coaster of emotions. I think that it is capable of making you feel things you haven't even felt before in your life. Music can make anyone feel like they are in love or like they are brokenhearted. If we were all to relate love to a song, I am sure every human would have a song picked out, no matter what culture or religion or belief. Different notes can make me feel different emotions. Low-pitched notes really make me feel like love might be truly possible. High-pitched notes make me feel like I could go crazy with pain and sadness. Great rhythms can make me feel like life is freedom. The music that people dance salsa to has a great rhythm. When I listen to salsa, I am just really thinking about how the sounds are making mischief on my soul. Good harmony is like a sweet girlfriend. Vibrations make me think of colors that feel friendly. Great guitar music can really get my very best attention because it pulls on my heartstrings. Hearing just a guitar makes me feel like I am getting a call from a lover. I feel in love, and I am happy. The frankly great vibrations of the drum can make me feel unusually strong. Loud music gives me the feeling of anger. I have great respect for singers that can make me get teary-eyed over a story. The song You and Me Together by Dave Matthews Band makes me feel the lyrics as if I were feeling every word was a happy beat in my heart. It inspires me to live life as fully as if I didn't have autism. The song Blue You by Dave Matthews makes me crave to be in love. Jason Mraz's song I'm Yours makes me feel happy inside and cherish all the people in my life. Because music makes me feel emotional, it is like being with a friend. Good music makes a big difference in my life. The most important thing it does is help me to sequence, meaning it helps me to know the order of steps in any physical action. Things like the steps of a task, the right way to move my body, and how quickly I react rests on the rhythms I feel. Music can remind me to get sequences correct. Listening to music while writing makes the flow better between my brain and my body. I truly think that music preserves my sanity because it keeps me in rhythm. Twice a month I have a neurologic music therapy NMT session. NMT is the therapeutic application of music to cognitive, sensory, and motor dysfunctions due to neurologic disease of the human nervous system. And this helps my brain organize the different parts of my body, i.e. upper, lower, arms, legs. The importance of NMT for me is that the different parts of my whole body frankly behave like they are separate, and the different parts seem to need to listen to the same beat to be able to move together like other people's bodies do. The NMT therapist helps me find my inner cadence. I truly believe that great music needs to be evenly balanced to keep my interest. Evenly balanced music is composed of great rhythm, lots of guitar and drum beats, and hardly any high-pitched notes. Really, the best music is very kind to the ears, just being present, but not intruding upon your thoughts. And this next article first ran in the Torrey Pines High School newspaper, The Falconer, in February 2010. Vision Processing and Vision Therapy, My Experience by Jeremy Sisalkira. Imagine that you look at a person, and your brain tells you that what your eyes see resembles a portrait by Pablo Picasso, where the face is all broken up. This is how my vision processing worked before I had vision therapy. Since I have vision processing challenges, I had to train my brain to correctly process what my eyes were seeing. When I was little, I could see in greater detail, and most children. I saw the dots and lines of black ink that made up each letter of a word on a page. I could not see the whole letter until my mom got the idea from a friend to make transparencies of the letters. I had to line up and match the transparencies to the same letters that were printed on paper. I had to train my eye and learn to look at the whole letter instead of the lines of black ink that made up the letter. Because this made looking at letters then easier, I learned to read. When I could read the letters, I read all the letters on a page at once because I realized I could. Pages were like my best friend because I could see familiar patterns. I like patterns, and the letters form patterns that had meaning. My mom read to me and showed me the words, greatly helping me give meaning to the patterns. Last year I started vision therapy, which really helps my brain understand what it is looking at. I did exercises that helped my eyes see more like neurotypical people. My visual processing makes it really hard for me to see in general. Vision therapy seems to help me see the whole picture. Now, when I look at letters, I see their relation to each other. I think vision therapy helps me to get my eyes and hands working together. Before vision therapy, I could only see fragments instead of seeing objects as a whole. It was hard to understand how different parts formed a whole. It was also hard to walk around without staring at the floor, because if I looked away, I had no perception, and I felt like I could fall at any moment. Vision therapy trained my eyes to get the whole picture of everything I see. Instead of focusing on the detail first, and then the whole, now I focus on the whole first, and then the detail. The vision therapy exercises helped a lot, because they began to change noticeably how I looked at the world. I started seeing things that I wouldn't really look at before, like images on a frame, or the smile on my mom's face, since before I would only see parts of a face without being able to recognize emotion. Vision therapy exercises also made me realize what the signs on the streets really were, and what they meant. Before, I would only notice the bright colors. Now I know to read the signs and understand them. Then, when I continued vision therapy, I got glasses with prisms. I remember when I saw through glasses with prisms for the first time, I felt like I had been blind my whole life. When I put them on, I felt like they were a brand new pair of eyes. I was so excited to understand what people see, like, compared to what I saw before wearing the prisms. I finally understood what the vision therapist and mom meant by saying I was using my peripheral vision to see. Before, I would not focus on what I was told to look at like everyone else does. It was easier for me to see through my side vision. But prisms changed this, because I could understand what it was to focus and to look at something directly with my eyes. I have to say that prisms are helpful for my guidance through indoor spaces, but they are enhanced even more by the addition of a yellow tint. Looking through lenses has greatly helped me with my perception of where I am in spaces. The yellow makes me see greatly the relationship between objects. Before glasses, I saw my dog, handsome, as a ball of fur. With the prisms, I could see a tail and four legs. With yellow lenses and prisms, I very much see the great depth of my dog. I see the dimensions. I mean, that he looks like he has more to him than just fur. He is visible as a very real and beautiful creature, and not just a blob. I saw Donna Williams, Ph.D., a person with autism and author of many books, including Somebody Somewhere, Like Color, To the Blind, at a conference on autism, where she talked about her visual perception at different stages of her life. As I listened to what she was explaining, I realized she and I have a lot in common. She talked about object blindness, and I figured out that what I knew as Picasso, like faces and blob objects all my life, was the same thing as this term she was describing. I felt very excited to know that there was somebody else out there that knew and understood what I saw like. One day I hope to be able to coordinate my body with my vision, and my vision with my body. It takes a great effort on my part to get my body used to my new way of seeing. It's very hard for me to control the urge to take my glasses off because my body isn't used to having them on my head and on my face. I like to do vision therapy because I believe that one day, with the help of my therapist and tutors, all the training of my eyes will pay off and, as well, I will be able to leave my glasses on. I think the glasses are a great component to my eyes and my brain because my eyes are like a door for my brain to understand and process the world around me.
Okay, so it immediately went into the second article, which was the vision therapy. And I just wanted to say that, again, these are articles Jeremy wrote for school. They weren't meant for presentations, though someone did present the vision therapy one to a conference in the UK. And I just find it very interesting that Jeremy now can communicate everything about what therapies were like for him and how things are helping him. He can really process all of that. So I just want to say, because it looks really simple having all these written words up on screen, that it's written over a long period of time with different support staff, because there are many different people that work with Jeremy that help him with his ability to communicate and, you know, use computer and keyboards and things like that. So in continuing with this, I am going to read off some answers to questions that were sent in previously, which now have been answered by Jeremy. So I'm going to read to you the questions and the answers, since Jeremy's unable to do that himself. So here was a question from Kathleen Dunkelberger in Pennsylvania. I would like to know how Jeremy deals with people that are not nice to him or that treat him in a condescending manner. How does he cope with this, and how does he respond to those people, and what advice can he give to others? Jeremy, when people treat me in a condescending manner, I try to remember what my mom has told me many times. Listen to yourself and realize that you have worth, and these people are not able to comprehend what they cannot understand. My mom has told people very nicely that I am not retarded, but I am autistic. My son is not deaf. He hears everything, she tells them. I let them think whatever they want. It is not important. I really encourage parents to become strong inside and to be clear to your child that it is not okay for people to assume they are retarded. Tell your child every day that you love him and believe in him, and he will be okay. Here's another question. There were a few questions that were sent in by Britt, Ella, Greg, Tanya, Rebecca, and Jane from Pleasantville, New York. And it looks like here that with his support person, Jeremy has answered two of them. Those questions are, when did you begin to use language to communicate the way you are feeling with other people? And did you have difficulties with eye contact when speaking with other people? Jeremy's reply, it wasn't until like five or so years ago that after learning rapid prompting method that I was able to communicate the way I felt. Eye contact is something that our culture expects when having a conversation, but it is something that I struggle daily with because the way I process, if I tried to look at you and I wouldn't be able to really listen to what you are saying. Okay, I'm going to explain there a little bit what Jeremy means by that. What he talks about after learning the rapid prompting method, this is how Jeremy learned to type and he learned academics and then how to communicate in open-ended sentences. It's through the rapid prompting method, which is a method that was devised by Soma for teaching her son Tito. And if you look on the internet at halo/Soma, H-A-L-O, which stands for Helping Autism Through Learning and Outreach. So if you Google Helping Autism Through Learning and Outreach, you will find out more about the rapid prompting method. So that is how he learned. And when he talks about not being able to look at someone to also have a conversation with them, this is something I just realized recently that he's been talking about, is that if he's looking at somebody, he can't process what they're saying. So he's mono-channel, which a lot of people with autism have, which is why when you ask someone to look at you and then you're expecting them to listen to you, they may not be able to do at the same time. Either the vision processing works or the auditory processing works, but not both at the same time. Now, again, remember that this is all information particular to Jeremy, which may be true of others, but does not mean that it is true of all people with autism. Another question from Lisa Morales in Springville, Utah. How do you help your children to speak even when they are older? I have a son who is 8 years and a daughter who is 10 years. Both are autistic and don't speak. Jeremy's reply, just because they can't speak doesn't mean they don't have anything to say. I am nonverbal and I still try and wish I could speak. It's true, Jeremy has some verbal language. He has a hard time saying more than 3 words at a time, but he still works, and we all work, on having him use his voice because it is one of his own personal goals. Another question. This one is another question from Kathleen Dunkelberger. What advice can he give to people that are typing but still need practice to be more accurate? And, of course, also, what advice to those of us that love them and are desperately hoping to hear more of their thoughts? Jeremy, I still practice every day whenever there is any new keyboards or letterboards or new support staff. With new support staff, I have to practice even more and start from the baby steps with them. Using some OT exercises like pushing in Play-Doh and games like Ants in the Pants is very helpful. It is really hard after years of silence to get the idea to share thoughts. First, try reading to your child and ask them questions about that topic. Read topics interesting to that person. It is easier to communicate about facts and feelings, but one day at a time, it gets a little easier. Here's a question from Mary Tressler. Was it important to you to be mainstreamed in school? Are there any accommodations that schools could have that you feel would be helpful? For instance, would a softer toned bell or a spoken message be better for a change of class alert? Jeremy, yes, I learned so much from the regular education teacher, and also I learned from the students. I made some friends. It is really helpful to have the lesson plan ahead of time and notes to be taken by others. Quieter bells would be helpful as usual, or as well. Quieter bells would be helpful as well. I'm having a hard time reading the person handwriting who took the notes. I just wanted to put this up here so that you have my website address so that you have more information about Jeremy. Because when you go to my website, if you click on Jeremy's or my son Jeremy's story, you can find out more about him. Okay, here's another question. Diane Silva, what has been your greatest challenge? Jeremy's reply, my greatest challenge has been to become the person I am today. Going through different therapies and IEPs and strategies, they have all been a challenge, but it pays off. Question, question from Susan Levine Perry. Hi, Jeremy. My nephew wants friends, but he is having a hard time keeping them. I think because he is not sharing. I have talked to him about this, but he seems to forget or get carried away. Do you have any suggestions? Thank you so much. From Jeremy. Being autistic is very difficult to make and keep friends. I think if he isn't sharing, even after you told him to share, it doesn't mean he isn't listening to what you are saying. He knows if he shares, he might make friends. He just has little or no control over his body. I know how I am supposed to make friends, but I can't always make my body do what I want it to do. Now, see, this is very true for Jeremy in terms of his ability to control his body and make it do what he wants to do. And other people have said the same kind of things, like Tito says that in one of his books that he ordered his lips to move, but they would not move. And also that I remember he was put on his on a bicycle, and his legs would not move when he tried to move his legs. It was like he says his muscles wouldn't listen to his brain. And so over time, because of the work his mother did, just like I did with Jeremy, that's how the muscle learns to do what it needs to do. So I would suggest also to Jeremy to the person who asked this question, that perhaps if you explain to your person, to your child, what it means to share, and then also to model sharing, and then also if he practices a couple things that have to do with sharing, he will get used to doing sharing and perhaps do it then. But maybe your child is not sharing for a different reason. Okay, another question. What advice? Okay, no, we already answered the one about the typing. Okay, here's another one from Kathleen Dunkelberger. Also would like his opinions on ABA, that's Applied Behavior Analysis. I have yet to find someone with autism that thinks this is helpful. And his thoughts on experience in public education versus homeschooling. Jeremy, I think ABA helped me a lot by breaking down tasks to small steps. I was able to learn. Also, prompts and rewards were helpful. However, discrete trial teaching that asked over and over the same questions was not helpful for me after a while. Homeschool was great because of the quiet and the lesson of frankly, just for me helped. However, the school was great when I had the right teacher and the opportunity to be in regular classes. Now, here's another question. What is the best advice you can give to a mom who wants to foster independence and support her young adult as he transitions to adulthood? And this one is from Dawn Stewart in Ghent, New York. I think the best advice I could give, this is from Jeremy, is to fully support your child's needs and wants, and if that's what he wants, then support him. It's the best thing you can do. And here's some overall advice from Jeremy that he wrote out and commented on after seeing the questions that were being asked of him. It is, I guess I should say that the best advice is to get to know how your child learns best. My mom is the best teacher for me because she understands how to get me to do my best. Nicely, my mom insists that I try harder when she knows that I can do better and she realizes that I need some downtime. Mom does get that some days I need to regroup. Well, this brings up an important point or a couple. And I don't know what you guys are seeing on the screen right now, but it looks like my slides have kind of gone off, so I'm going to try and get them back on just so that you can have them on here. Okay. The thing about Jeremy and learning, and I think any person and learning, is that you want to make sure that you have figured out which channel of learning, which processing works best for them, because that's what they'll be using for learning. So if someone has very good vision processing, then they're going to be a visual learner. If they have better auditory processing, they're going to be an auditory learner. And don't think that because your child or your student is staring at something intently that they're processing what's in there. Jeremy, for years, would look at the books, and I always thought that he was taking in the information, and now I know, as you've heard from what he's described in his writing, that he actually was just looking at the little tiny dots that were making up the letters. And so you have to be very careful about what learning channel is working. And the other thing is, you have to have high expectations, but not too high in the sense that they're unrealistic. Because, as Jeremy says, it's a balance between having high expectations and then understanding when they do need that downtime so that they're not always trying to process everything around them. They do need time to regroup. And a lot of adults that I interviewed for my book, Autism Life Skills, talked about that. Well, that's it for today, and I hope you've enjoyed this presentation by Jeremy and with my moderating for him. If you have any questions or you have any comments, I'm sure that Jeremy would love to have your comments to know what people thought of his presentation. You can look him up on Facebook and send him a message. Even if you aren't a friend of his on Facebook, you can send him a message. And he does friend people. So if you want to be his friend and see what he does from time to time, you can ask for that connection. Thank you all for listening. enjoy the rest of your day with MomsFightingAutism.com. This is a great conference, Things to Know About Autism. And thanks again to Ernest Priestley.